Ever find yourself in that like law school hypothetical nightmare? The deal's gone south, someone's in breach, and you're staring at a mountain of UCC trying to figure out, who owes what to whom.
Yeah.
Today, we're diving headfirst into a real-world version of that, the case of Furwood Manufacturing v. General Tire, Inc. It's a 1996 decision from the Sixth Circuit that throws us right into the thick of a breach of contract under UCC Article 2.
What's particularly interesting about this case is the situation Furwood, the seller, found themselves in after General Tire, the buyer, backed out. We're going to dig into whether Furwood's decision to resell some very specific equipment, these post-cure inflators, 3 years later, and even using parts from them in the interim, was commercially reasonable under UCC Section 2706. It really tests the boundaries of that concept.
Absolutely. And for you, as aspiring legal minds, this case is, well, it's packed with valuable lessons. It touches on how contracts are formed under the UCC, what remedies are available when things go wrong, and just how much flexibility sellers have when trying to mitigate their losses. Understanding how these principles play out in a real business dispute, that's the kind of knowledge that sticks.
So let's lay the groundwork. Back in 1989, Furwood and General Tire agreed on a deal for 55 of these post-cure inflators, or PCIs. The pricing structure was tiered. The more General Tire bought, the lower the per-unit cost.
Then in February of 1990, things seemed to be moving forward. General Tire's buyers signed a letter of intent, outlining their intention to purchase those 55 PCIs over the following 15 months. They even bought 22 units. But then, unexpectedly, General Tire shut down the very plant that was supposed to use these specialized inflators, leaving Furwood with 33 unsold machines.
And this is where the initial legal question rises for us. Did that letter of intent, coupled with their initial agreement and those purchase orders for the first 22 units, actually create a legally binding contract under the UCC?
Yeah, that's the key.
General Tire later argued that the letter wasn't, formal enough acceptance to constitute a contract.
But the court saw it differently. They agreed with the jury's finding that when you looked at all the pieces, that letter of intent, the earlier conversations, and the actual purchases, it was clear that both Furwood and General Tire intended to be bound by a contract for all 55 PCIs. So even without a perfectly formal document, their actions indicated a mutual agreement.
That's a key takeaway right there. The UCC isn't always about rigid formalities. It looks at the practical realities of business dealings. If the conduct of both parties shows they believe they had a deal, the law is likely to recognize that.
It emphasizes the intent.
Exactly. The intent to be bound as demonstrated by their actions.
Okay, so we've established there was a contract and General Tire breached. Now, Furwood is stuck with these specialized PCIs and needs to try and sell them to minimize their losses. This leads us to UCC Section 2706, which gives a seller the right to resell goods after buyer breaches and then recover damages, basically, the difference between the original contract price and the price they got in the resale, plus any reasonable extra costs they incurred.
And this is where the concept of commercial reasonableness becomes absolutely central. After General Tire's breach in April 1990, Furwood didn't have another buyer lined up immediately. In fact, they spent the next 3 years trying to find someone to buy those 33 specialized PCIs.
3 years is a long time.
It is. And interestingly, during this time, they even used some of the standard interchangeable parts from these unsold machines to fulfill separate orders for spare parts from other customers.
Oh, okay. So then finally, after that 3 year period, Furwood managed to sell the remaining PCIs, but they had to do so at a reduced price. So they sued General Tire to recoup their losses.
Gotcha.
Now, General Tire argued that this resale wasn't commercially reasonable for two main reasons: the significant delay of 3 years and the fact that Furwood had used parts from the machines in the interim.
This is really the heart of the matter. The court had to determine if Furwood acted in good faith and in a commercially reasonable way, considering all the specific circumstances. What's fascinating is how the court addressed General Tire's arguments.
How do they break it down?
Well, they acknowledged the 3 year gap, definitely. But they also stressed that these PCIs weren't your everyday widgets, They were highly specialized industrial equipment, and the market for them at the time of the breach wasn't exactly booming.
So, niche market, hard to sell.
Precisely. The court noted that Furwood had made continuous efforts over those 3 years to find a new buyer. They didn't just sit on them.
And what about Furwood using parts from the unsold machines? That seems like it could be a problem. General Tyre contended that this fundamentally changed the nature of the goods being resold.
Yeah, that was their argument. But the court reasoned that because these were fungible, interchangeable parts, and the essential machines themselves, the post-cure inflators, could still be identified as the goods from the original contract, this didn't automatically make the eventual resale commercially unreasonable.
Ah, so the core identity wasn't lost.
Exactly. The core functionality and identity of the goods remained. The court really drilled down on the good faith and commercial reasonableness requirements of Section 2706.
So what was the conclusion?
Their conclusion was essentially that Furwood acted honestly and made reasonable efforts to minimize their losses, given the challenging situation with these specialized goods and the lack of an immediate market. The delay alone wasn't enough to label the resale as unreasonable, especially when dealing with such niche products.
So flexibility is key here.
It really underscores that commercial reasonableness isn't a strict set of rules, but rather a flexible standard that depends heavily on the specific facts of the case.
Mm.
Courts understand that businesses don't operate in a vacuum.
Okay, makes sense. Now, the jury initially awarded Furwood a total of nearly $288,000, which included around $100,000 for interest. But this is where the case takes another interesting turn, right? Delving into the often tricky area of incidental versus consequential damages.
Exactly. General Tyre argued that this $100,000 in interest should be classified as consequential damages. Now, under the prevailing interpretation of Michigan's UCC at the time, sellers generally couldn't recover consequential damages.
Right. Those are the indirect losses.
Yeah, the indirect losses that result from the, it's not the direct costs.
And the majority of the appellate court actually agreed with General Tyre on this specific point. They reasoned that the interest expenses were indeed consequential damages and therefore reversed that portion of the jury's award.
So no interest recovery.
So while Furwood could recover for the lost profit on the resale and their direct expenses, they couldn't get compensated for the interest they incurred, according to the majority.
However, there was a concurring opinion from Judge Welford, which adds a further layer of complexity. Judge Welford suggested that some of those interest costs, specifically those that could be directly and demonstrably linked to the breach, perhaps interest Furwood had to pay on loans they took out, specifically because General Tyre didn't fulfill their payment obligations, might actually qualify as recoverable incidental damages. Incidental damages are the direct costs a seller incurs as a result of the buyer's breach.
Like storage or shipping costs, or maybe some interest.
Potentially. Judge Welford proposed sending that specific issue back to the lower court for further consideration.
This disagreement really highlights just how fine the line can be between incidental and consequential damages, particularly when you're talking about financial costs like interest.
Absolutely. It also underscores the critical point that how a specific state interprets the UCC can have a significant impact on the types of damages a seller can ultimately recover. The jurisdiction really matters.
Definitely a point for law students to note.
So, for you as future lawyers, what are the crucial takeaways from this deep dive into Furwood v. General Tyre? First, sellers operating in good faith have a degree of leeway under UCC, Section 2706, when it comes to reselling goods after a breach, even if finding a new buyer for specialized items takes a significant amount of time.
The law recognizes market realities.
Yes. Second, don't underestimate the importance of initial communications and conduct. That letter of intent, combined with the subsequent actions of both parties, was sufficient to establish a binding contract under the UCC.
Right. Conduct matters. Formal, perfectly executed documents aren't always necessary if the intent to enter into an agreement is clear from how the parties behaved.
Third, the classification of damages, especially financial costs like interest, can be a surprisingly intricate issue and can vary depending on how the specific state's courts interpret the UCC.
Always check the state law.
Always make sure to delve into the relevant state law when analyzing damages in a breach of contract case.
And finally, remember that a seller's efforts to mitigate their losses don't have to be perfect. The standard is commercially reasonable, not absolute perfection in hindsight.
Yeah.
Furwood's decision to utilize some parts from the unsold machines didn't automatically render their eventual resale commercially unreasonable. The court looked at the overall circumstances and Furwood's good faith efforts.
In the end, the Sixth Circuit largely upheld the district court's original decision regarding the existence of the contract and the general damages from the resale. They only reversed the portion of the award that covered interest, sending that specific question back for potential further review.
So the core rule holds.
And as our standard brief would tell us, the core legal principle here is that under the UCC, when a buyer breaches a contract, the seller can recover the difference between the resale price and the contract price, along with any incidental expenses, provided the resale is conducted in good faith and in a commercially reasonable manner.
So as you continue your journey through the world of law, keep the lessons from Furwood v. General Tire in your toolkit. It's a compelling illustration of how the abstract principles of contract law and the UCC apply in the very real, often messy world of business.
And it leaves you with something to consider. In situations involving specialized goods and a buyer's breach, what does commercial reasonableness truly demand of a seller in their efforts to mitigate damages? It's a reminder that legal principles are often applied in a context-dependent way, requiring a careful consideration of all the surrounding circumstances.
Definitely food for thought. We hope this deep dive has been insightful for you, and we look forward to exploring more fascinating legal cases with you in future discussions.